Detroit's journey through bankruptcy has been historic, unprecedented. The fact that so many pieces came together in order to get approval by bankruptcy judge Stephen Rhodes is nothing short of miraculous. A team from the Detroit News has taken a deep dive into just what it took to arrive at last Friday's victory lap. Business columnist Daniel Howes and reporters Chad Livengood and David Shepherdson's story is entitled Bankruptcy and Beyond for Detroit, the inside story of the deals that brought Detroit back from the brink in 15 months. Daniel Howes is here now. Is miracle a fair assessment?
Well, in a lot of ways, I would say it is. In fact, Judge Stephen Rhodes, when he read his 50-page opinion from the bench on Friday, said it bordered on miraculous, and he was referring more specifically to the pension settlement that was part of the grand bargain. You know, what distinguishes this whole thing and why we spent the time really focused on the grand bargain in our piece in today's Detroit News is because it was, A, unusual, and, B, it was the central deal that distinguished this bankruptcy and brought it to a conclusion. It's the only thing that brought new money into this bankruptcy and essentially persuaded pensioners to settle their grievances against the state and against the city, and to leave this process with, in the case of police and fire, their pensions basically whole in terms of their basic pension, and only a 4% cut for general retirees. It's remarkable also in the sense that the community rallied its own financial resources to try and solve a very difficult problem. And Judge Rhodes made that point also on Friday.
It's a compelling read as you spell out how Judge Gerald Rosen came up with this idea, diagrams it, and then starts making phone calls, and between foundations and Lansing and the DIA and the pensioners, to see all of that come together. I think people get at the very least, a thrill out of seeing the fact that we can mediate and can reach something important in terms of consensus and actually set partisan considerations aside.
I think that's true, but I think what's really important is there's, if I may, a little bit of an oversimplified understanding of how this thing happened. A lot of people assume that foundations, because in many cases they have billions of dollars in assets, they're just going to give the money. In fact, what happened here was much more nuanced and difficult in some ways. This never would have happened but for the conditions that the foundations put on their money. They made it very clear to Judge Rosen in November of 2013 that they were not going to do this alone. There had to be a matching component from the state, and the DIA's donors had to be involved or no deal. And that was very, very important. And up to that time, Governor Rick Snyder had said, you know, I'm not putting direct money into any kind of bailout of the city of Detroit in the context of the bankruptcy. But then on December 13th, Gerald Rosen walks into his office and says, I have what I think will be $350 million in commitments from foundations, and I think you should match it. And that event right there is what sealed the partnership. And at that point, Governor Snyder started working with the Republican leadership in the legislature to build what essentially was a cost-benefit business case for doing this. And then they moved down the road, and eventually, as we report, by the end of January, the governor personally asked the chairman of the DIA for the DIA to commit $100 million to the effort. And at that point, they'd only been they were ready to go to 50. So he was doing his own fundraising, and then down the road we go. But those were very critical meetings, and we report kind of the back room discussions between foundation heads and their boards and some of the key issues that I think give people a better understanding of how this thing unspooled.
As you talk to the players and you dug into all of these backstories, what most surprised you? What didn't you know before?
Well, you know, when you do something like this, you're looking for, I think, depth of understanding, and you're looking for human components, like meetings, for example, or things that you didn't know about. A couple things that are interesting in it, I think. We never knew until we reported it this morning that Judge Victoria Roberts, who was on the mediation team, reached out to Judge Rhodes with a proposal, and that was, would you come and meet with heads of the unions? She had been mediating union and pension fund issues and was very concerned that the people involved in that just did not understand Chapter 9, what it could do, what it couldn't do, what the judge could do, what he couldn't do. And so she floated the proposal to the lawyers for the city at Jones Day and said, I'd like to do this, but I need your permission to do this because you're the lawyers for the other side. And they said, fine. So Judge Rhodes came into a conference room on the seventh floor of the federal courthouse and spent a couple of hours answering questions, explaining the process. And if you go back and look at the timeline, you see that very quickly thereafter, a number of deals with the unions and pension funds started falling into place. We didn't know, no one had reported that before, and I think it's a very interesting window. She had come to the conclusion that what the unions were facing here was something that they, frankly, they'd never seen before. Number one, an emergency manager with near dictatorial powers. And number two, he was operating inside the context of federal bankruptcy. The combination was power unprecedented that unions had to deal with. And for a long time, they thought they were in a bargaining session, and they weren't. They didn't have to bargain. And he had the power to abrogate contracts either with a stroke of a pen or in bankruptcy or both. And I think that was a very important move to, for them to understand that.
Daniel, I want to have you look with us at some of these key players now that you really have this big picture and a lot of the backstory, and tell us what it was about each of these people that made this person with the right skills at the right time. And let's start with Governor Snyder.
Well, as far back as 2009, when he was a candidate, Rick Snyder was looking at issues in Detroit, and I think he had come to the conclusion that things were, they already were on a downward spiral. Any of us who were there contemporaneously kind of knew that from a financial and governance perspective. He campaigned in Detroit to the derision of his fellow Republicans. And even before he was inaugurated in 2011, his choice for Treasurer, Andy Dillon, the former Speaker of the House, was hiring professionals and asking them to start looking at the financials of the city of Detroit. They thought the situation was going to get worse. I think Governor Snyder, I think history will show, was very committed to Detroit, is very committed to Detroit, and made a very courageous decision and pushed a very aggressive timeline that, of course, the judge had to had to accede to, in a sense, and kind of they had to be on the same page. But I think he was, in a lot of senses, the right person at the right time. I'm not at all sure that some of the other governors that we've had in the last couple of decades, Republican or Democrat, would have made the same call.
Kevin Orr.
Very uniquely positioned. He had a sense, he was a bankruptcy pro. He was a Democrat, has a sense for, in some ways, the common folk. And when he makes mistakes, he tends to fix them. But I think he was always transparent about what he was trying to do. He told people up front, don't make me go to bankruptcy. Don't make me do this. And I think it was very clear from the beginning that this was the direction he was going to go. But you know what? There are things he could have done that he didn't do. He could have cut the pay of city council and said, I'm not going to pay you anymore. He could have cut the pay of the mayor. He could have told Mike Duggan when he was elected, you know what? I'm the emergency manager, and you can just sit there and do ceremonial things and handshakes and cut ribbons, but you're not going to have any power. Well, they cut a deal, and over time, the mayor got more and more power, and to the point where now he is the mayor. So I think Kevin, again, was a very unique property. He wasn't even the first choice. He was the third choice for emergency manager.
And then finally, we'll roll them together, but Judge Stephen Rhodes and Judge Gerald Rosen.
Oh, boy. I think you have to take them in pieces.
Okay.
I would say this. Judge Rosen recommended Judge Rhodes for the job. He's the chief judge of the district. He wrote to the chief judge of the Sixth Circuit, Alice Batchelder, and he recommended Rhodes for the job. And Rhodes took it, and one of the first things he did was he wanted Rosen as a mediator and said he wouldn't have do it without him. And Rosen accepted and very quickly came to the conclusion that he needed help. So he assembled a team of mediators, which was originally five others and himself, and then two more joined later. But I think he was very prescient. He understood what the legal issues were and what were likely to keep this case mired in litigation for years to come, and those were the two issues, the pensions and the DIA art, that he tie-barred together and tried to seek a single solution to two problems, and was indefatigable. I mean, he worked it hard. He worked his sources. He used his mediators. I mean, it was a team effort. Judge Rhodes, on the other hand, really showed some spine, I think, in all of this. He surprised people. In December, he ruled that pensions could be diminished, which no one expected at that point in the case. And had he not done that then, the grand bargain probably would not have been able to march forward. because it was very clear that the money that was assembled for the grand bargain was going to be the alternative for the unions and the pension funds. You can continue to go through the case, continue to hope that you're going to somehow emerge without getting a very nasty haircut, or you can consider the alternative. And the alternative is this pot of money here that we're trying to assemble that could be used to bolster pension funds in exchange for the DIA getting its independence and the ART remaining whole and owned by the DIA. And so had he not ruled that on December 3rd, I think it's highly likely that we would have had a different outcome.
The big story from Daniel Howes, along with reporters Chad Livengood and David Shepherdson, is on the front page of today's Detroit News, Bankruptcy and Beyond for Detroit. You can find it at detnews.com. Daniel, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.